My name is Natalie Malso, and I am 31 years old. Today is December 24th, 2018, and I'm speaking with my father, Jack Malso. We are recording this interview in Brooklyn, New York. Dad, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood and what you were like as a child?
I was athletic as a child, and my father was in the construction business. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. My schooling was in outside of Detroit, in Detroit, Michigan. I was fairly athletic as a teenager. Enjoyed sports. I wasn't the best student, but I had a good home.
What were your favorite sports to play?
Football was my favorite sport in junior high. When I got in high school, I was on the wrestling team. I enjoyed that. wasn't a great winner, but I won about half my matches. So wrestling was fun in high school.
What position did you play in football?
I was a defensive end and offensive end. Couldn't catch the ball very well, though. Darn shoulder pads were always getting me in the way.
Can you tell me about your parents?
My father worked in the field as a construction worker until I was about 15 years old, and then he moved into the office. It gave him a different perspective on construction, but he traveled a lot. So he didn't attend a lot of football games or wrestling matches. But when he was home, we got along pretty well. He always had projects for me to do.
What do you mean?
Well, one day we went to the hardware store and they had this long rolls of plastic, what they call hose. And I thought you could hook this up to the house and play it out to the garden and water the plants that way, Dad. And he said, no, just stick to the buckets, son. They're much better for you.
You're making that up.
Yeah. It's a good story.
What else did he have you do to keep you busy?
Oh, he had some projects, some very unusual projects. Besides cutting the grass and painting and things like that, there were home improvement projects or maintenance projects that he thought up that were pretty interesting, like edging bricks around gardens and things and around trees. He did that a lot. And every year the bricks needed to be taken out and put back in for some reason. And there was a project where he broke up the garage was a little bit too low. So he raised the garage up 6 inches with threaded rod, and then he broke up the floor, and it was my job to reassemble the broken concrete on the side of the driveway, which was pretty interesting. Yeah, growing up with Dad was fun, and it made me big and strong.
Did he show you how to do things, or did you just have to figure it out on your own?
I think he showed me. I just remember being left alone for most of the time. We didn't work together very often.
Oh, no.
No, we didn't work together. It was more of a delegated authority thing. Delegated responsibility, not necessarily authority. The authority was always where it always was. But the responsibility was delegated.
Did your sister have a lot of jobs to do around the house?
Not that I remember. She was... definitely nothing to do with father at the time. He kept me pretty busy.
Hmm. Why do you think that was important for him?
I think because he could see that I was starting to grow up to be big and strong, and he definitely needed to, definitely was something he could use. And he was used to running crews at work, so he was used to telling people what to do. And then coming back later on and making sure it got done. But you have to realize that On the planet where I came from, all men were brave and strong, not like here. So we had a different sort of perspective on things.
So what do you think that taught you? What do you think all those projects and...
Well,
he was a little heavy-handed, maybe.
Heavy-handed, I guess. It was the 60s, though. It was a different attitude about growing up with kids. Just sharing time together was a big deal. We may have been working on different ends of the yard, but the yard wasn't that big.
Mm-hmm.
So he could come over and give me a little cuff behind the ears and say, not that way, this way. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't really abusive. It would be abusive in this day and age, but not then.
What's your fondest memory of him? Then or later?
One day I won a match and he said, good job. That was about it. The things we shared had to do with projects around the house, work. We took some vacations, but we didn't do things really together. We did things together in a group. But I guess the projects that he would come up with for me to do, and it was a never-ending list too, so that was always interesting.
You're never done.
Yeah, you never really actually finished the job.
Started back at square one again.
Well, when you were trimming the garden with red bricks, one standing up, one laying down, you could always come back next year and take out all the bricks and put them back in again, level this time.
Hmm.
And I learned a lot about dealing with people. Like, I didn't necessarily think that the way that he dealt with people was the way I wanted to deal with people.
What do you mean?
Well, it wasn't through kindness or anything like that. It was about responsibility. Like, you should have done it right the first time. Yeah.
Hmm.
Even though he didn't bring the level out in the beginning, sometimes I think he brought the level out after I was half done, just to make sure that I understood that it's never going to be perfect.
So wait, so he would bring a level out, like if you were laying the bricks down, and then he would make sure that they were level?
Yeah.
That seems pretty extreme.
No, that's the way you do it even today.
To make it look good.
Yeah. So usually that's the way you do it. Depends on how big of a level you got too. What else?
What about Grandma?
Mom was always treated me really well. She was the buffer between the old man, and she said she loved me a lot. Gave me a really good foundation for future women in my life. Taught me, Dad really respected Mom and made sure that I did. I guess that's one of the biggest things that I remember about Dad, is he really loved Mom and made sure that I treated her with respect.
Was the house, would you describe it as peaceful, or was it?
Yeah, as long as I didn't give my mother a hard time, my father didn't kick my butt. That was about it. I guess now that I think back on it, his relationship with my mom. And my mom always treated me well. She always said she loved me and spent time with me and really did lay the foundation for my participation with other women.
Did you and your sister get along?
Not too well. I mean, we got along as we were four years apart. And it was the 60s, and you didn't hang around with your sister too much in the 60s. But yeah, we're closer now than we were then.
Hmm. tell me about how you and Mom met?
Well, we met in college, and I had been in the Marine Corps for 4 years before I went to college, and attended college at a couple of other schools before I finished up at the one where I met your mother. She was exceedingly attractive, and I was exceedingly salty at having been halfway around the world in the Marine Corps. And she was right out in the entranceway working for the university in the information desk. And I knew enough about being a world traveler to know that all I needed was some cookies and a fast line to figure out what was going on there. So I showed up with a package of chocolate chip cookies, and I asked her what sort of information she had, because she was working the information booth.
And how did that go over?
We got married and stayed married for 40 years.
So do you remember what she said when you came up to her?
She said she didn't want any cookies. That's what she said.
And that really was a lie.
Yeah, she threw me for a loop there. But my hair was long and my jacket was brown leather, and I had been down that road before. So I knew she really wanted the cookies. She was just trying to play hard to get. And we started going out and met a couple of her girlfriends. And I realized if I wanted her to be interested, I needed to be interested in one of her girlfriends. So I enacted the let them see it and take it away trick, whereas you let them see it and take it away, and then they want it back. Worked out really well. Classic move.
Classic.
Classic. Works really good with jewelry, too.
So how long did this little dance go on for?
40 years.
You guys dated for a few years.
It was as soon as I met your mom, there was hardly any dating that went on after that. There were associations that occurred, but once we became emotionally linked, your mom was quite the center of my attention. Pretty good, huh? Center of my attention?
Yes. So what else do you remember about the early days with Mom?
Well, we were in college, and I had been to four colleges before that one, trying to finish up. So I was a diligent student, taking all these business classes like economics and finance and accounting and stuff like that. And she was taking classes like creative writing and English 1000. And so we were in sort of different areas of school. I was a serious student, and she was an intelligent person that was making it on her laurels. And we graduated the same year.
What year?
I mean, we graduated I don't remember what year, 1980 probably, or 79. I think I had to graduate before I was 30 years old, the old man told me. And I had, because he didn't think I was going to finish school, because I had been to four or five of them before. But I knew I could finish. When I got out of the Marine Corps, they had moved to Wisconsin, and I was had a lot of friends in Detroit. And I made a conscious decision to go back to school in Wisconsin, because I knew too many people in Detroit, and I'd get in trouble. And I had at least 6 months of anonymity in Wisconsin before I would start having fun and lose interest in school. So I decided to go to Wisconsin. That way I wouldn't have too much fun too early.
So did you go to college before the Marine Corps? You tried it, and then you dropped out and went to the Marine Corps?
tried it a couple of different places. University of Michigan, Eastern Michigan, some school in Ohio, I forget the name of that one. And Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin in Waukesha, and then I finished up at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. So I was well versed in picking universities, deciding which one was best for me, which really worked its way down to the frequency of Mexican restaurants within a mile of the university. I always liked Mexican food.
That was an important detail.
Well, that was the way I gauged the college experience.
Mm.
It had a lot to do with Mexican restaurants.
And why did you choose to major in business?
Well, I had used up all my elective credits, and the truth of the matter was that the calculus course in business is a really small book, and I figured I'd be a better salesman than a scientist. So, and I didn't like biology classes, and I could squeeze more my electives, or squeeze more of my qualifying courses into a business major thing than I could anything else. And a lot of it was based on the fact that the calculus book was really small. The math qualification wasn't that high.
Mm-hmm. What other classes did you take that you were interested in that maybe weren't business related?
Well, I was a psychology major for two or three schools.
Oh.
And
does Emily know that?
I don't know. Yeah, I was I didn't decide on being a business major until after the Marine Corps. Probably a little of the shine was off of psychology after being a sergeant in the Marine Corps. I realized I didn't exactly have the temperament after spending a little time in Paris Island to be a psychologist, because I had learned from other sergeants in the Marine Corps exactly how to work psychology into your getting people to charge machine guns. Because it's better for them to charge the machine gun than to stay back with you.
What does it mean to charge a machine gun?
I mean really charge a machine gun.
Like shoot a machine gun?
Like have people shoot a machine gun at you. And you are in the trenches and say, charge.
Mm.
There's a certain psychology to get people out of the trench.
Mm.
And it basically, the fact that they don't want to stay.
Oh, charge a machine gun.
They don't want to stay in the trench with you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way it works.
What was it like at Paris Island?
Well, it wasn't paradise, I'll tell you that.
Where is Paris Island?
It's North Carolina or South Carolina, I think. And I was smart enough to enroll in the Marine Corps in August, in the July, August, and September, which is probably the worst time you can go to North Carolina, in the swamp area they call Paris Island. But it worked out pretty well. I graduated an honor man in my platoon. And that's one time that Mom and Dad came down for the graduation from Paris Island, and there were about 500 guys out there graduating that year, and I was the one carrying the flag. But it was said that Dad was pretty proud of me that day.
Yeah, he talked about that day a lot.
Not to me.
So what else about the Marine Corps? How many?
I didn't go to Vietnam. The Vietnam was going when I went in, but I went in when I enlisted. They stopped sending, about a year after I enlisted, they stopped sending in people to Vietnam. So for a year, I was kind of wondering which way I was going to go. But I was on sea duty and had a secret security clearance to guard nuclear weapons. It was more of just a logbook thing where you check people's badges and had him sign in and sign out. The if you made a mistake, that was a big deal. But usually if you knew what you were doing and kept track of people going in and out, you were in good shape. It's only when you made a mistake that they got to be a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I was on sea duty, so that means we traveled to Europe and South America. We didn't get to stay long, but I could see it from the boat.
Was it exciting?
Well, you were on the boat, and the boat gets pretty boring after a while. There's 500 or 600 or 1,000 guys on the boat, so there isn't much excitement. There's just a regiment of duty.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to see things like Paris, you get to see France and Spain and all these places from about 1,000 feet off into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So some of it was pretty interesting looking. And when you did get to go ashore, there was the usual Marine Corps entertainment that was there, as long as you had money.
So how long were you in the Marine Corps?
4 years. Got out as sergeant.
Did you have feelings either way about going to Vietnam?
I didn't. Well, I did in the beginning. The reason I joined the Marine Corps is I thought I could be a professional soldier. But then, after I was in the Marine Corps for about 6 months, we went into dry dock in Philadelphia, and I decided to get my wisdom teeth pulled. So I went to the VA hospital and to get the wisdom teeth pulled. And at the VA hospital, I met a bunch of guys that had come back from Vietnam that were missing pieces or had burns and stuff. And I came to the realization, till this day, I realized that being a professional soldier was no glory.
Mm.
And it wasn't, the hard part wasn't dying, the hard part was living after you were
mm-hmm.
spent time over there and didn't come back with all your pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So I really changed my attitude about that. All that shoot 'em up stuff,
mm-hmm.
people—that's actually people living and dying.
Hmm. Where else did you travel on that boat?
Well, let's see, Philadelphia. We were in. We did a. They call them med cruises, where you spend 6 months afloat in the Mediterranean and Italy, Sicily, France, Spain, and we were part of a duty section that at one point in time there was upheavals in Jordan. I think it was Jordan. It was some Middle Eastern country where the United States ambassador was ambushed and killed in the street with his Marine Corps bodyguards. And let's see, President Carter decided that we were going to go in and take over the embassy. But he didn't want to aggravate the situation, so he decided to send us in without bullets for our guns, which would have been an interesting ploy, except that if you don't have bullets in your gun, you don't have bullets in your magazines, and you show up in the street marching with your guns and they don't have these big magazines sticking out of the bottom, everybody knows you don't have any bullets. So that wasn't the best idea. But we did fly in, but if you put the magazine in your gun without, then you'd had to pull the stop back to the rear and you could see inside the gun.
Mm.
So if you don't have bullets, everybody knows. Anybody that has a gun knows that you, if you don't have bullets. So we actually didn't fly in. Mr. Carter didn't quite understand the mechanics of a M14. But we were gonna fly in. We were sleeping in the helicopters. And there was a bit of psychology involved in that, getting 20 or 30 Marines to sleep in the in a helicopter and realizing that they were going to fly in when the sun came up and they weren't going to have any bullets in their guns. There's a psychology to that.
What do you think about guns? Do you own any?
No. They're fun tools. Marksmanship is fun. But they shooting people isn't fun. There's no glory in it. Definitely no glory in it.
Do you ever have to shoot at someone?
No. But I did see people that got shot.
Mm-hmm.
That changed my whole attitude about shooting. But guns are fun. I like the smell of at the cordite at the rifle range. And it's there's a mechanical nature to actually hitting the target that's fun. To be able to do it and make it happen over and over again in the same spot.
Were you a good shot?
I was an expert as far as Marines were concerned, but you had to at least be able to hit the target a certain number of times just to be a Marine. And The Marines have been teaching people how to shoot for about 250 or 300 years. And they've been turning people that had paper routes into serial killers for a long time.
So besides shooting, what other skills do you recall learning that you thought were, that was
getting people to do what you tell them to do? Half of them do it because it's about authority. Sometimes authority is because other people give you stripes and other times authority is because people think you know what you're doing. So you get to decide whether you want to play the stripes card or the know what you're doing card. Because and when it comes right down to it, those people are going to get in the helicopter and charge machine guns.
Do you think it was hard to adjust going, you know, once you got out of the military?
Well, in the military, everybody gets in line and marches to chow. And then they eat and they go back and they march home. Whereas in out in the real world, it's like herding cats. Everybody's going a different way because they think they know. In actuality, they should just get in line and march to chow and then it'll be over. And that's the purpose of what's going on. We're going to eat. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, marching to chow is a good analogy. Just get it done, whatever the job might be, and move on to the next job. And you don't have to listen to all the what about this and what about that? Because the game is we're going to have lunch and then we're going to go do something else.
So back to you and Mom.
Oh boy.
So how long until you guys realized that you wanted to be together?
I liked her in the beginning. She was really pretty.
What else did you like about her?
She was really smart. And she was interested in me. That was fun. I was pretty grown up because I was 30 years old and graduating from college, where most people were 22, 21 years old. And I had been around the world one time, and 30 years old, and was pretty well fixed in my attitude about school and girls. And I knew I had a good thing going with your mom. Because like I said, she was very pretty and very smart.
So you guys got married right away?
No, not right away. We lived together for a while. And in Milwaukee, I like Milwaukee. Milwaukee was a cool town. University of Milwaukee was a really great school because it was a city college. And At one point in time, I spent time in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at a city college there, and it was residential housing, and there were a lot of other things going on in the town, in the city. So, and the architecture of the houses was really cool.
How did you propose to Mom?
I asked her to marry me.
Where were you?
I don't remember. I guess we were probably, I don't remember.
Do you have a ring?
Oh yeah. Did I have a ring?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. Her. I didn't have a ring. Your mom waited 30 years for me to buy her a ring. Yeah, she was real swell about that. But we had a wedding.
Tell me about the wedding.
And there was a neat museum in town called Villa Terrace. And your mom got it together to have us get married there. It was right by Lake Michigan. And, the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, excuse me, is down on the east side of Milwaukee. And it's not just repetitive big dorms and stuff. There were old Victorian houses, a lot of them, where you could live. And we had our wedding on the east side. There were maybe 20 people there. But it was a classy setup. Your mom looked beautiful. And I've always been glad to reflect, when I reflect on how that all happened at that time. I don't remember much of it because I was well schooled in my 60s attitudes about entertainment.
What about your honeymoon?
Yeah, that waited. We waited the year before we got married. We went to Acapulco for a week, and we decided that would be our honeymoon. We just took it early.
So why did you guys wait a few years before getting married if you knew she was the one?
It's just the way it worked out. I don't remember all the details. I do remember that she told me that we needed to get married for a long time before I decided we needed to get married. And but then I realized that, like always, she was right, and we did need to get married. Well, I graduated from school, and she graduated from school, and it was at a point where we could have gone our separate ways, I think, because I was going to work in construction, and I'm not quite sure where she was going to go. So it was better that we got married. That way we didn't lose each other. That was good too, huh? Lose each other? Yeah. Excellent.
So tell me about the day that I was born. And how did you feel?
Well, the day that you were born in the spring, and it was a nice time of year. And it was a lot different than when your sister was born in the dead of winter. And because your sister was born before you, I was acquainted with the stress of childbirth. And yours was an easier birth on Mom because she was acquainted with it. And I remember, don't remember too many of the details on how it all went down, the race to the hospital and all. I think we went a couple of times to the hospital, and they sent us home because your mom wasn't ready yet. And then we were living in East Troy, Wisconsin, and there was a big hill in our yard, and we took Mom out, and it was about a 30-foot drop to this, a 30-foot rise to the top of the hill. And I think we walked up and down the hill twice, And Mom said, it's time to go. And it was in more of a local hospital. And we just got, it was only about 20 miles away. And it was in the daytime. And like I said, it was in May. So there was no snow. And yeah, your birth was easier than your sister's birth. And we were real happy about it. And I think we didn't have any, I think you came, we came home and we needed to, you needed to be in an incubator, I think, for a little while, but it was at home. And we were more established when you were born. So.
What do you mean established?
Well, we had the house that we live in now. We were living there in East Troy, and it had been a couple of years we had lived there. So the house was an old farmhouse, so it wasn't exactly remodeled when you arrived, but it was more, we were a little bit more figured out. You had a room, your sister had a room, and we knew that you should be on the main floor, not upstairs, because it's a lot easier to take care of a baby when you're in the same floor as the kitchen and the bathroom.
So do you remember how you felt the first time that you saw me?
Oh, I always liked you a lot. You were fun. You held my hand, stuff like that. And you were, well, when you were a baby, you weren't, but when you got to be 3 or 4 years old, me and you were pretty tight. We'd grab onto my finger and we'd go for walks. And you had curly blonde hair. And you were a real, really beautiful baby. And I was very much in love with you from the first day.
Was I a happy kid?
Yeah, you were. You were, the way I remember it, you were a happy, loving baby who demonstrated a lot of affection to me and your mom. And our lifestyle was such that we were able to provide for you pretty well, even from the very, and I was old. I was 30 years old, and I'm not quite sure how old your mom was, but our lives were.
You were 40.
40? I graduated when I was 30 years old from college. And I think I must have been about 35 when you were born. Mm.
Okay. Can you tell me about one of your happiest memories of me?
Well, I still have a picture on the refrigerator of coming home from work one day, and I was all sunburned, and you used to meet me at the top of the stairs, and we'd have cookies and something together, something to drink. And in the picture, my arms were all sunburned, my face is all sunburned. I got my head in your lap, and you're wearing a puffy pink girly dress, and you're wearing your jelly shoes.
I love those shoes.
And I got my head in your lap, and you look like you're soothing my, and you got your head on my head, and you look like you're trying to soothe my sunburn. And I look like I need soothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were a fun kid, there's no doubt about it. But I was older and work was good, and we had a couple of extra bucks every day, every week. So we had a good relationship, and we could provide. And from the very beginning, that's what I was into, was providing. Because your sister is beautiful, and you were beautiful. Your mom is beautiful, and it was my job to be the hardworking butterfly.
What was it like to work all day with a bunch of rough guys doing construction and then come home to the three of us?
Well, that's it. I realized that construction part was easy because I was used to people telling people what to do, having been a little bit older than them and being in the Marine Corps and being getting out as a sergeant, I didn't have any problem telling people what to do. And having worked with my dad for, I had a pretty good idea of what needed to get done so I could be a couple steps ahead. And it's all about planning. So it's things you, the notes you take or you make in the morning on the way to work and the notes you make in the afternoon on the way home. If you do that, you pretty much can get it done. I mean, it's not brain surgery. It's just construction. And I realized that no matter how hard the job was, I mean, construction was, I was an iron worker at the time. So I realized that no matter how big the job was during the day, the real job was at night when you came home. Because if no matter what you did during the day, if you forgot to take the trash out when you left in the morning, your name was mud. And that it didn't matter how high up in the air you worked during the day, because when you're driving home, some little old lady in a Cadillac will cut you off, not realizing that you were Superman during the day. When you came home and you forgot to take out the trash or the remote on the television didn't work, that you had to be Clark Kent when you got home.
So how did becoming a parent change you?
Well, it taught me more responsibility than just work. You had to be responsible for the job that you did during the day, but you had to also be responsible when you came home. The job wasn't over just because you were in someplace, in a different territory. You still had to cut the grass before dinner. But that's okay, because at the end of the day, when the grass was cut and the building was built, whatever time you got off, you felt good about yourself.
What's the best advice you could give someone to raise kids?
Who's raising kids? Oh, love them more than you love yourself. Pretty much, that's it. Love them more than you love yourself. Realize it ain't that important. That it's the stuff you do at home is just as important as the stuff you do at work. And you can't be Superman unless you can be Clark. That's the deal. No matter how many buildings Superman flew over, and no matter how many bullets he stopped, and no matter how fast he ran, or if he could make time go in reverse, when he got back to the office, he had to put on the glasses and the hat and be Clark. So you can't be Superman unless you can be Clark.